All right.
You'll be appreciative.
Welcome to A Course in Miracles, everybody.
Thank you.
This is Andrew, your coach in miracles, coming to you from Breckenridge, Colorado today with another fascinating episode of Thursday Course in Miracles. Glad you could make it. I'm on the third floor in the attic of this building where my bed is.
And you remember to bring your book, right?
I got my book. Yep, don't be home without it. Yeah, yeah. All right. So tonight we get to talk about, the whole section we're studying is titled Faith, Belief, and Vision. And what we're talking about in this is the opting or trusting of a different way of thinking, and even a different identity of what you are. And these are the ways to go into your living, conscious state of being, to go in and disrupt your living, conscious state of being in order to choose a better way, in order to choose the miracle, to go from false to right, in order to let go of your stinking thinking. Faith, belief, and vision. It's the three terms the Course in Miracles uses to help you pry yourself off your habit of being completely fixated on the past and predicting the future with what happened from the past, and relying completely on something that is not real. Faith, belief, and vision. These are the words that the Course uses as invitations to have you stop what you are currently doing with your mind habitually and try the better way. Very nice shirt, Barbara. This is a woman who knows how to dress. I just want to point that out.
She matches you, in other words.
I'm just saying, when it comes to a Thursday, the woman knows how to dress. I don't know why. I have the feeling or the sense. It's kind of visceral.
Andrew, you look a bit like a sailor in the Russian Navy.
That's
the same shirt that they wear. It's funny. But you're looking handsome.
All right, thanks.
Both right. Of you.
So, A Course in Miracles is always kind of inviting you, teasing you, promising you that there's another way. Knowing that you're ready to look at another way, you're ready to release what you've already been doing habitually. Even that you are the person in the mirror, everybody here is already one way or another decided to release that, at least give it a try, to look at another possibility. But honestly, your mind, your habitual mind, has a quick and deep hold on what you believe you are and what you're going to experience in the next 5 minutes already. So what we're asked to do with a spiritual journey is to access a part of our mind that is nonlinear, that can go beyond what you see with your eyes, hear with your ears, remember with your brain. Remember with your brain. You see, what you've done with your brain is you've made a prison out of your existence purposefully to experience what it would be like to be separate and different from the truth. Whatever that is, we don't even have to define it. We don't even have to describe it. You do, however, have to be motivated some way, somehow, to leave behind your addiction, to leave behind everything you now know and trust to be true. That's a tall order. It's very personal. But I got to say that without some moment in your life where you go with 100% conviction or surrender is another word, you will always be holding out that it's not true for you, that it's not accessible for you, that you cannot be spiritually awakened. And the way you can test that is if you find yourself constantly deferring to fear as a guide, or if you find that you have a burden in your life of assigning guilt to somebody else for your happiness. These are just obvious ways, but I think they're important to discuss for a moment. They're the opposite of having faith, belief, and vision, because they are idolizing sin, guilt, and fear. Keeping the world that you've been watching with your brain and your eyes, keeping it real, keeping it present, keeping it trusted as your life and the only way you're actually going to live. If you don't learn how to live better in the world, then there's no way you'll be happier, says the ego. Of Course in Miracles says, if you don't find a way to put the world down, even for a moment, and discover the power and peace and freedom in this very moment, if you don't come out of time, if you don't come out of witnessing with your eyes, with your brain, that means the past and memory, your ears and your senses. If you don't come out of that, even for a moment, then you will continue in the role you've chosen for yourself. With the power of God, you have chosen the role of being expressing and limited to the human existence again and again and again. So how would you do it? How would you possibly free your mind? The Course has chosen for us three ways to look at this opening of your mind: faith, belief, and vision. So, and I'd like to, before we get into this, I'd like anybody else, if you're feeling uncomfortable physically, a striped shirt would be appropriate. Barbara, would you agree? Yeah. Okay, just, you know, last chance, go to the closet, get it. You know, I'm just saying, if you really want to take your advantage. All right. So what we're talking about is, it really is a surrender. It's a very, very personal surrender. You're not surrendering to something dangerous. You are surrendering to the truth of what you are. This truth, this unseen unknown, it's not even seeable or knowable with your body's eyes. You can't say it in words. There is no poem. There's no song that captures it. This book has done about as good as I've ever found to venture my mind into the openness and the surrender, the simplicity, the trust that goes beyond understanding, the peace that I can take on and find that it's contagious with others who are looking for it. Something is beyond what Andrew could ever do. And so I've even had the experience many times that Andrew is not real. It was real character, like a stream character with role, a script that he was. But there's nothing there. There is no depth to Andrew. Barbara, I got your mute. Go ahead. Can anybody else hear her? No, she's back.
No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So when you've had those experiences, has it been disorienting for you at all when you have those experiences of you aren't the you used to think you were? I don't know. I sometimes fall. I mean, sometimes I feel exhilarated by what I'm learning and reading. And then sometimes I just feel like, well, I need more direct direction from the Holy Spirit.
I can just tell you what happens with me.
Okay.
When those moments happen, it's opposite of disorienting. It becomes very, very simple. And I'm still seeing Andrew. It's not like I suddenly see or know that I'm something else. I just know I'm not Andrew. And I know it with a simplicity and a fullness. A fullness that says, wow, this Andrew character is just playing out. In fact, The other thought I've had many times now, and actually I read it first time in The Way of Mastery and had a spiritual awakening on it. A wonderful book. I highly recommend it to everybody. It's Course in Miracles, Christ, big discussion of Christ-mindedness. And this is a quote from Jesus who was reflecting, "I am not living, but I am being lived." Yes, that's exactly the feeling I get when I take a step back. I'm being lived. It now I can understand how I am so particular and so peculiar, and I have preferences because I'm being lived. And in fact, I can't even control my own heart beats and the amount of the breaths I take and how tall I am. I mean, it's just all that's happening. I'm being lived. And that's such a very resting thought that brought me so much peace. And then I just step out of Andrew, even just for a moment. I take a few great breaths. It is disorienting because Andrew's still doing whatever Andrew's going to do. And I just recognize that script will play out. But oh my God, part of me is awoken and is looking at Andrew. Therefore, I'm not Andrew. It's kind of an eternal, spacious, simple. Like I say, simple, it becomes funny. Like when you know, how a TV show is not real. Mm-hmm. You can see a bunch of real things in it. Cars that I like and people I've become to know in the TV show. But for a moment, sometimes I step back and think, you know, these are actors and I hope they renew next season. And I step out of their seriousness. Ross, what do you got?
So for me, it's like, one of the things that happens for me is I notice my conditioning. In other words, I go, oh, I prefer this. You know, I prefer this sport over this other sport, unlike other people who wouldn't want anything to do with that sport, like rock climbing. And I see the conditioning from my parents that drove the Ross character there. And, you know, I'm just okay with it now. I'm just like, well, that's what the Ross character likes. That's his preference. And there's no problem with that. It's just noticing that, oh, this Ross character has these preferences based on conditioning.
Yeah.
So,
that's, and it is. It just is.
That's kind of how I just let it. It's like the Ross character doesn't really need to change all his quirks and everything. Well, that's just the way his little humanness is. That I don't have to identify it and say, oh my gosh, I'm so awful for being this way. You know,
or change it and try to be something else.
I need to change my preferences because of some, you know, perfection model that I find on TV or whatever.
Yeah.
No, it's just that's the Ross character and he's doing what he's conditioned to do.
And suddenly, yeah, perfect. And I become more useful when I just be whatever Andrew can actually bring instead of what Andrew should bring or some other person that walked in before Andrew or some other teacher should do, you know, they do. No, I don't try to stand up and match anybody, but the best version of me that I can come with my heart and my mind. Sundari.
Well, that your description, Andrew, I could have almost said every word of it, you know, the feeling of that state for me, that the other quality that I keep thinking of in the moments I've had that been in that is just complete freedom. It's, you know, I do not have to know what to say or do. Because I'm this wonderful puppet, just like that quality of stepping aside. I've written about it a lot, the quality of no intention, having no intention whatsoever, just stepping aside and allowing oneself to be lived. And for me, there's nothing juicier because of the expansiveness and the freedom of it and the no pre-worrying, just there I am. And so it's a really glorious state.
A great sense of freedom to be able to step outside of the decision maker and recognize that you're not that. I'm not the character. Yeah. Jacqueline.
Yesterday, I just, you know, we have discussions in our culture about equality, but I just really, you know, I just had this sort of understanding that we are all absolutely, totally, purely equal.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Equality. It's equality. Of course, we're one. Also, we're just one.
We're not the same, right?
No, but it's just
total, but we're equal.
We're total equality among,
but not the same.
Yeah.
But equal.
Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Jacqueline. Oh yeah, you can ride that one. You can take that one for your whole. That explains the existence, permits and allows anything to happen. If you can understand and feel the equality and forgive what the ego says would be unequal or too different to still be equal. That's good, good, good. Please, anybody, if you have a question about that for Jacqueline, ask her. All right, so what we're talking about indeed is this ability for you to personally experience the seeing the cartoon as a cartoon, seeing the play as a play, seeing what the Course in Miracles calls the real world. The false world is the world that you witness and have to react to because it can harm you. The false world is a set of circumstances that define you as male, female, young, old, anything of the world. The world defining you is the false world. And it has been set up to continue to entertain you with an identity that does not have a capital letter on it over and over and over again. That is the false or the illusory world. Oh, there is a world. There's just not a world the way you see it. It's not what you think it is. This is our task. This is our job. To open up our spiritual eye. To open up a translator. To allow a translation of what you've been witnessing and thinking all your life. To allow this openness. And when you do, and I've heard this throughout the group and I've experienced it personally, the holy instant that comes, you've got a miracle, change in perception about a situation. You've got forgiveness where you let go of your habitual thinking about the situation. Why? Because the miracle showed you it's harmless or not even real. Miracle, forgiveness, holy instant. And in that holy instant, those moments of my life I've lived in the holy instant have been far more real, far more true than any moment I've lived as Andrew, even in his greatest high self-esteem moments. And I have been lifted in those moments, those holy instants. I have been lifted out of my identity with Andrew because I just don't fit in Andrew's entire life. These have been the most grateful moments of my personal existence in a body. They are my spiritual awakening moments. They are my holy instances that have been compounding and building. And none of them have gone away. And so they have brought me great peace. Cecily.
Andrew, I was hoping you could talk a little bit about when we human bodies face like health challenges. And like, obviously, it seems to me life is easier with a healthy, fully functioning body and more challenging when there's limitations and health issues, and how to frame like that perspective with the Course and how to deal with that as we humans have our health challenges.
Very good. Thank you, Cecily. Let's talk practical here. Okay, first level is, first comment on what you said is do it now. Choose peace, learn the power of your mind, before you have a physical challenge that where the world and the body closes in on you and smothers you and makes you so you can't even hold the book up. If you can. Some urgency, please. Some urgency, please. Use whatever health you have, whatever time you can spare to discover the power of your mind, to open your mind and be able to experience peace in a variety of situations while you while it's easy, because it is harder when you've got big demands on your time, when you've got physical illnesses, when you have financial difficulties, when the landlord is knocking on the door and saying, my next knock will be the sheriff if you don't push a check out underneath. It is harder to do Course in Miracles in moments like that. Or if you that doctor appointment and they say, we don't know what this is on the x-ray, we're going to have to take another one. This could be bad. It might not be nothing. We don't know. The x-ray machine is broken. We'll see you in a month. That's kind of a tough month. I mean, this is the way the world continually works to strangle you right into submission of separation. So I got to tell you, when the world gets tired, it gives you a break. It is a really good time to take the easy route and go pick up some Course in Miracles. It's not necessarily the fastest time to do your spiritual awakening. The fastest time to do your spiritual awakening is right when you leave the doctor's office and you feel like crying. Because this, you know, you fear this could be bad. That is really when you're most fragile and available for a spiritual awakening, truly. But it's not necessary. So, yeah, Sundari?
Well, I've found at those moments where there's a health diagnosis or something like that, that the thing that keeps me into that is my grabbing the sphere of infinite possibilities at that point. And the reason I grab it at one point is my fear. And so I've gone through, you know, with a diagnosis and, you know, real symptoms and stuff.
Oh, hear everything.
Fear of making peace with my fear about dying in this situation, my peace about if I'm incapacitated for life, could I still envision, you know, happiness for myself, or, you know, and what I found is that that loosens my grip, and then I can make a picture of a different life to offer myself and throw that out there and just not let my mind go into worry any longer. And each time, and it's been more than once that I've played this out with a true, honest medical diagnosis, the diagnosis has evaporated. Mm-hmm. Literally, you know, even though it was going on a while and there were real symptoms and real tests, boom, two different times. So,
hey, you know, I gotta continue, Sundari. I wanted you to continue with this, but I'm going to stop just for a moment to comment on what you said. And I want you to recognize, Dr. Day, you might weigh in on this. I have personally experienced, and I've studied some biomedical stuff myself and my biotech education. And it turns out that, guess what? When you have a fearful thought, you block your own body's pre-designed immune system to fight whatever illness you might have, be it broken bones or cancer. Or mental depression. When you have worry thoughts, they compound and they evoke from your pharmacy upstairs to have your body follow through with fight or flight chemicals, and you start to feel weak, you don't sleep as well, you don't digest as well, and guess what? There's more room for the world story of illness to just continue and roll out. However, when you have a meditation practice, when you choose, even though there's a bunch of scary things to read and to look into with your medical diagnosis, you choose to take a few minutes out and start your day with a peaceful meditation. Find yourself in stillness and in peace. Try a little bit of awakening moments. The body responds by, in the pharmacy, closes. And you'll notice your breathing will start to regulate, your heart rate will even change, your adrenaline will go down, norepinephrine and some cortisol and some other chemicals that the body naturally puts in when you're worried or fearful or guilty. Those start to diminish, and the body just does what it's naturally programmed to do, which is have a good time. And then you get remission from cancer, you get bones healing faster, you get all sorts of illnesses that just disappear. Because they are cooperation. The illnesses, each illness and every illness is a cooperation in sickness. It itself is not a power in itself, especially in the way that you experience it, especially with things like depression and worry about a future that hasn't happened yet, especially with those, right? Reason why we focus on those rather than the broken bones and the cancer diagnoses is because they're present when you have broken bones and you have a cancer diagnosis or when you don't. So we do with the universal ability to heal your mind and open yourself to the next step in your spiritual awakening. And indeed, by choosing peace, by stepping out of the victim and the worrier, even for a moment, you can buy yourself a good night's sleep and some healing, mentally and physically. Cecily, you have more questions? Oh, Luann?
What you're saying applies so strongly to my profession. I notice the clients who are worrying all the time are getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And when they finally realize they might as well not worry anymore, they get well.
Yes, I've seen that too. They resign. They give up. They figure, well, I guess there's just nothing I can do. And then they start to heal. Yeah. Yes, I've seen that. Yeah. Cecily, you have some more questions in particular?
Well, wait. I wanted to hear, I know that you went through some physical health stuff like a while ago. I think you said your back was broken or something like that, or I don't remember what it was.
Oh, yeah, I've had all sorts of, I've had broken ribs, I was paralyzed. I was
the paralyzed, like that's a big deal. Like how did you maintain your, like, how did you talk to yourself and carry a perspective through that?
You know, I got to say, the more serious injuries that I've had have been the easier ones because it's so inevitable, like divorce. Some of you, you know, I've worked with people going through divorce and it's really tough leading up to the divorce. But the minute the D word starts being used, as ugly as it is, now you know where it's going. And then, you know, so my bigger illnesses where I was, you know, very much threatened, those were the easy ones, I got to say, because the inevitability and nature of it, there weren't a whole lot of decisions to make. I just chose peace and happiness because it was preferable. And I got tired. Sometimes I would just get tired of thinking about telling stories. There's one thing is you end up telling stories about some of these horrible injuries you had. And they become a burden to tell. The ego likes telling the stories. Just to pick one aspect of it that was an improvement. I stopped rehearsing them in my head. I stopped telling them to other people and thinking that this was a great discussion to have. And it's just a whole load of my life, a burden and a thickness I used to practice. I stopped practicing and it started to disappear. Literally. Yeah. Yeah. More of it's made up than you know, even I was in the hospital and, you know, all this stuff more of it was made up than I thought, you know, more of my experience of it, certainly. And then turns out the physical things that they predicted also were kind of made up. You know, Dr. Day? Timothy.
Yeah. If I become sick and I have thoughts of anxiety or depression that are associated with being sick, at least in my own mind, which comes first, the thought, the unhappiness, or the illness? And the conventional storyline, I believe, is you become ill and that's the reason for your depression, as opposed to you're depressed or you're anxious, and then there's an attendant illness that's associated with it. So So is it, you know, the chicken or the egg? Which comes
first? Is it the thought? Yeah, or the feeling. Which is first?
Well, the event, cancer, fractured ribs. Which, you know, did those things first, you know, happen and then cause you to have the emotional experience? Or were you depressed for a while and then along with that came, you know, the ego said, okay, we're going to give you some supporting evidence.
Very good, Tim. This is one more thing to be depressed about. I'm getting into depression. Very good. Yes, yes, yes.
And we're not used to it. So I like to, every time I find myself in a depressed mood or an anxious or an unpleasant state, one exercise I can do is very quickly pause for just a moment and say, what were the thoughts that were immediately antecedent to the mood I'm in now? What storyline popped up? What took place in my head?
That's great. That's what I could say. I talk to people and say, when you're in a bind like that, stop thinking about why you're depressed and start asking, how are you depressed? How are you manifesting it?
Yeah. How did this come about?
Yeah. Go look in the mirror. You'll start getting clues right away of how you're depressed.
And with that comes, with that seeing, comes the ability to make a decision to change.
To make the change now.
No.
Make the change instantly by stopping following the fear of pain and more pain or loss or sickness and so forth. Coming into the present moment is the key and the antidote to just about every problem the ego can come up with. Which is why so much of the workbook, they're really meditations. There's all sorts of ways to catch your ego in its very justified issues and step out of them for a moment. Like it says in chapter 31, I've forgotten why I'm so upset. I've even forgotten now. Oh yeah, it's because whatever. But for a moment there, you really bust the ego, even with the cancer, even with the horrible things. I'll tell you, you take a few breaths of simple air during your problems and they begin to diminish. Yeah. Barbara.
My lesson for today was beyond this world is a world I want.
Oh, yeah, there is a world I want. Yeah.
And that helped me all day with that process, you know, because I am currently back in the cesspool of divorce documents big time. And so every time it would get to me, I would just say, beyond this world, there's a world I want, you know, and I know that there is, that this world is one I have to deal with. I have to deal with it.
Yeah.
But it's not the only one.
And it's still a world.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Beyond this world, there is a world I want. You bet. You bet. You could take a vacation anytime from this world by seeing that this world that I see, this world that I hear, this world that I understand holds nothing that I want. That's previous lesson, 128, I think. If that's really true, and you get some freedom from saying this world really is just where my body is living, but it does not contain any of the love or the expression of love that I want and I truly live for. And you can say, wow, if you just step that, if you allow that thought to occur, even just for a moment, it allows you to see the world differently. And that's what we'll be doing tonight as we discuss the real world.
Because the means are faith, belief, and vision.
Yes. You know? Yes. Yes. And Cecily, if you're still there, Don?
Well, I have a question about if the world, I've been through a divorce. If the world is just an illusion, why engage, like in a lawsuit, why engage in a lawsuit when it's just made up? Why not just say, give it up?
Yeah, well, of course you might, and that is one of your options.
But I guess, is there something, like, since this is the world I made, is it something I need to go through to get to the other side?
This is your answer. Maybe too short for you, but I'd be happy to elaborate, but I'll tell you what goes through most people's mind, actually. You will do, Dawn, with a lawyer or without a lawyer in a divorce, you will do whatever you believe at that time will bring you personally the most peace.
Okay.
This is what you will actually do. We could talk about other things and we could talk about charities too. How much people could do to help the world or even to devote themselves to more Course in Miracles. We could. We could talk about how you're actually doing your course lessons, but what you will actually do in your life is what you believe will bring you the most peace. And for a person going through a divorce or for a person who has a particular illness, they might get the most peace from seeing a doctor, taking a pill, doing more exercise, just so they can have enough peace to find their Course in Miracles book and maybe get their spiritual on.
And can I just add, you know, I think it depends on the particulars of each particular divorce or situation. And I mean, one of the things that I've noticed is just the lessons that there are in this process of what happens to be a divorce for me right now. And that my experience of where I started it and even where I was months ago is very different. I'm not driven by anger or vengeance or, you know, wanting to get this or that or the other thing. I'm much more peaceful in the process of going through it, but I still have to be practical about the particulars of what's going on.
And here's the way I've framed it in my life. Maybe I had these big decisions to make an involvement, you know, in worldly things. And it's this, it is that life as Andrew has become very much like a football player on a football field. I'm already suited. I have a number. I've got a position. And the more I accept that I really am doing this, I really am playing football with time, space, body, food, money, responsibility, family, your friends, dogs, pets, you know, all these things are actually there. I'm already on the field suited up. But because of my spiritual work, I recognize that I'm not actually Andrew, but I am playing that character out. And that little separation from my ego, which is a football player, my little separation from my body, which is a football player, and which is my ego, that little moment of breath where I invite the Holy Spirit to give me a sanity check, that allows me to look now at the fact that I am playing out a human body, a football player on a football field. And suddenly so quickly, I can look at the game again and say, either hold on to the ball tight or hit low, hit fast and hit low. You will be hit unless you run. Drive on the right side of the road. Get a good lawyer. If you're going to spend the money, get a good lawyer you can actually relate to. You could actually have an interesting relationship as you work your way through a very complex and interesting thing. Get a good doctor who can talk to you and can somehow say things and explain your illness that you can understand or offers you research so you can get on the same page to help bring you peace about the medication you're taking, on and on. That means you play football better. Guess what happens? You play football better, it's a better football game. Even if you lose, you say, man, I played though. And I would do it again. That's what I hope all of you say when you die. Your body dies. You know what? I would do it again. Knowing what I know now and my freedom, and you will all, on your deathbed, right? If all of you know, you should know, that there will be those last moments when you realize, this is probably the best way I've ever heard it said, that your entire life to you now in your last moments is like a single night's dream.
The older you get, the faster you realize it's a single night.
Yes. Right, Luann?
All right. I was Dawn? Talking about it today, but yeah. I remember kind of what I did today, but don't ask me about yesterday.
Right. You actually live in the present moment, and you've only lived in the present moment, and all that you'll ever live for as many years as you think you're going to live is going to be one moment. And let me give you another clue. That moment you live will be absolutely informed and qualified by what you're thinking at the time.
Yeah.
No exceptions. So guess what? You are responsible for what you think and what you see and what you feel. And what happens to you, you have invited.
When I got divorced, my husband sat me down the day after the 89 earthquake and said he was having an affair and he was getting a divorce. And then I didn't say anything. And after a while, he said, well, aren't you going to say anything? I said, well, what do you expect me to say? But what I realized for myself is I don't get depressed very often, but when I do, I don't get depressed. But when I think I'm going to, if I'm not careful, what I do is I sit down and I say, okay, I know that I don't have to get depressed. All I know that I have to do is just figure out what it is I'm thinking about that is depressing me and figure out why I'm thinking it and then let it go.
Yeah, you know, that is good, but it's kind of a long way, a longer way than necessary, because that little three-letter word slipped in, W-H-Y. Why could take 10 years with a therapist to get a satisfactory answer, and both of you will forget what you came in for 10 years ago. However, if you go with how am I depressed right now, go in front of the mirror. I'm depressed because my shoulders are up high and my head is down low. I'm depressed because I'm not sleeping and I haven't eaten for 3 days and I refuse to take a shower. Somehow I don't feel worthy of a shower. That's how I'm depressed. I think all of that adds up. How I keep thinking about this guilt thing or what somebody said about me or about what's going to happen next week, when that's how I'm depressed now. Not why. Get rid of the why and you will find yourself in some freedom with the how. And you might even giggle a little bit at how difficult you've been making your own life. This is one of the promises I made to myself long ago, early in A Course in Miracles, the first, maybe before A Course in Miracles, the spiritual stuff I was studying where it was really suggesting that you are responsible for your thoughts. And I simply said this phrase to myself because I was just, my mind was opened with how much I live my thoughts. And I said, wow, the world is tough and it'll get tougher or easier, but one thing is I will never get in my own way again. I'd just done some circling with my thoughts for days, and I just woke up from it. And that's the phrase I woke up with, and I've never forgotten it. The world may get in my way, but I will not get in my way. And I suggest everybody make that vow to yourselves today.
I think you're absolutely right, because what I did for the year after was I would go every day for 45 minutes for a long walk during lunchtime. I worked at Lockheed at the time. And I would let myself start expressing whatever wanted to come up. And if it was anger, I would let the anger out, and then it would be gone. As soon as I recognized it, I could work it, and then it was gone. And by the end of a year, I had no more problems with being divorced. In fact, it's one of the four things I appreciate my husband for, was divorcing me.
Thank you. Why didn't you do it sooner? David, what do you got?
That's what my therapist said.
Anyhow, what you were saying about the how and why, I remember we used to years, a few, you know, when we used to have classes that we used to talk about the why and the how. Right now is when you said it, just, you know, it's the why is silly. It's just asking why to me almost is laughable. And I understand what, and I can't explain it, but the how is so, you know, it's just, you know, you look at it, you go into the instant and give it the Holy Spirit and without any judgment, and it just works. That's how you do it.
You know, you have to admit if you look after why are you unhappy, and if you get a reason, you will stay unhappy.
Yeah, then you got to have, why is that? Why is this? Just give it all. It's like silly. It doesn't exist. Why doesn't it? Just it is when you were talking about that, I was laughing because it just say, why doesn't exist really?
It really doesn't. You have to make it up again. Yeah. Good, David. That's it. You got it. Cecily.
I want to come back to your analogy about football because I loved that a whole lot. And the idea that you're suited up, you're on the field, you have a number, the game is underway, and you can say, you know, I'm, you know, going to be in this game, so yeah. I might as well give it my all. But how do you stop yourself from being like, but my, you know, I got these crappy teammates. It's an unfair, the other team has an unfair advantage. I'm running with an injury and, you know, like all of that. Like, you know, you could, I feel like I could still like critique the game that I'm being played in and being like,
this. Yes, of course you can critique the game and your teammates. And in fact, the grass is too wet today. They should have called this off. Yeah. Is anybody watching that? And how I got to deal with it? Yeah, sure. Yeah. But you recognize that all of those are inevitable. Your teammates, the grass, the time of day, whether or not you had a good night's sleep. Now you're playing anyway. You're already suited up and you've already shown up. So suit up and show up. And the way that you relieve the negativity is that I'll give you, there's many ways. I'm just going to give you one. And you can continue asking and I'll give you more. Okay. But you see, the task is you have to unseat the ego from judgment. The ego thinks that it should be different. The Holy Spirit knows this is exactly what you've carved out for yourself. So here's the trick to derailing the ego in a bad moment. I'm just giving you one. There are many. One. Ready? Stop. And you say, well, here I am. It doesn't get better than this. No kidding. You crack a joke, and those are the words. You stop, you look at the crap around you, and you say the field, the suit, the people, the disadvantages, the uncomfortable burden on you, the fact that the dishes aren't washed again, whatever it is. And you have to stop your ego from circling. You know what I mean by circling? You practice a negative thought, then you feel what you just told yourself. And now that you feel it more, you have enough, you just say it more, and you circle down and you go deeper. You complain about your life, and now it feels like you should be complaining more about your life. But who started the complaining here? See what I mean? So the key here, one of the key, I'm just saying one, is you stop and you say, well, actually, it doesn't get better than this. And you stick your thumbs up in the air or you point at your problem. It's kind of funny. It's funny to me, and I laugh every time. I'm able to do this more easily, perhaps. My addiction to peace is very sincere. I really do default to peace in ridiculous situations. I had another one over the weekend. I could have been seriously injured. I did get a little injured. But I just said, well, I had the opportunity to do that dangerous thing. It doesn't get better than this. And it just, that phrase is exact opposite of worrying. And then I wake up, Cecily. My Holy Spirit, now I can hear. And I realize that I'm already on the field. I already have a uniform. I got a number specifically for me, and it ain't going to change. I got a feel on the position. I'm surrounded with these jokers, but you know what? These jokers are my teammates, and it ain't going to change. So I'm going to show up with your Course in, my Course in Miracles, right? I am not a body. I am not a football player. I am free. I am not bound to the stricture and the punishment of being on a football field for life. I am free because I'm not a body. And how can I justify, any of this crazy thinking? Because the simple logic, and this is the holy instant, the simple logic of I must be as God created me and I'm still that way. Because God is truth. And truth doesn't change. Whatever truth is, I'm that. It doesn't change. It is loving. It is free. Bodies change every single minute, every single nanosecond, but you can't see it. But after a while, if you look at the pictures over time, they're changing constantly.
Is it the same idea, like, to think that, like, we are, you know, actors in a TV series or something? Like, that this is just, like, we'll show up for work, and our work is, like, acting out this drama of life, you know? And this is, like, the house we're put in, and the family we got, and the job, and the boss, and the dog, and whatever. And there's, like, you know, some lines and whatever, but it's not really real. It's just kind of like,
hold on. It is real. It is real because you can describe it. And you look at your uniform, you can read the number all day. If you forget, just look at your number. You're not going to forget. None of you, none of us. Because we are really, really characters in a real dream. It's an elaborate dream, I'll tell you, but much better than the ones you have sleeping in your bed. It's real. Turns out it's not true. Turns out you can't keep it. Turns out you're playing along at a mistaken identity with the character in the dream. Let's real quick just go to page 101, paragraph 6. It's a long time since we've been there. It's time to go there with Cecily's comment, where the Course has a way of describing this. Text, page 101, one of my favorite paragraphs in the book to just distill what happened. Hey, everybody, what happened? If we're all sons of God, if we're all infinitely powerful, if God is love, where's the love? Right now, what happened? That's a fair question to ask every time. 101, paragraph 6 kind of cuts right through it. It's just, okay.
Come here. Come here, Bobby. Come on.
We can read, we should probably read 5. Let's read 5 and 6. And Jason, when you get there, I'm going to unmute you. Would you start reading paragraph 5 to get us warmed up for the amazing paragraph 6?
The ego cannot hear the Holy Spirit.
That's 4. That's 4. Let's go for 5. Let's go for the next paragraph.
Sorry. Yeah. Got confused by the sound. Okay. The ego uses the body to conspire against your mind. And because the ego realizes that its enemy can end them both merely by recognizing that they are not part of you.
Whoa. Did you hear what he just read? You guys hear what he just read? Everybody on the same page here? Because it's pretty important.
What page is that?
What page are we on? We're on page 101. And before we hit paragraph 6, you really got to get your mind in the right spot. Otherwise, this is just going to sound pretty. Page 101, paragraph 5 right now. Jason is reading. And I want to remind you what he just said. He said that the ego uses the body to conspire against your mind. That's like sickness, right?
That's amazing.
Or tired or hungry, or the brain is part of the body, and depression is reported and held and reproduced by the brain. By the brain. Fulfilling the request. Okay. And because the ego realizes Now, the ego is logical. The ego is after an insane goal, but it does it very logically. The ego is part of the mind. It's a good machine. It's a good calculator, the mind. So if the ego takes just a moment, and you start your spiritual journey, you have a couple of, shall we say, nice awakening moments, a few holy instances, and the ego loses some ground, this is because you begin to move to identify with your mind instead of your body. You are not your mind. There's a true identity, but nonetheless, you get back to what's called right-mindedness, okay? So that's when the ego realizes that its seeming enemy, the mind, can end them both, merely by recognizing that they are not part of you. Whoa. This requires a miracle. It requires a spiritual awakening. It requires you to awaken to what we're going to study tonight, for example, the real world. But what happens is they join in the attack together. This is perhaps the strangest perception of all if you consider what it really involves. You see, with it, they being your mind and your body. Now your mind is convinced you are a body, starts to listen to the body that's in pain. For example, Cecily brought up physical illness, so let's use that. The physical illness now becomes proof that the mind is weak and is being attacked by the body and can't possibly choose peace, for example. It's become a self-fulfilling prophecy. The mind now contributes and goes back to studying the body's weakness and claiming it as its own weakness. Do you see the problem here? Do you see the circle and the self-fulfilling prophecy? Okay. Sentence two. This is perhaps the strangest perception of all if you consider what it really involves. The ego, comma, which is not real, comma, take a moment, take a breath. The ego does not have an opinion. Your mind, following the ego script, forms an opinion. The ego does not have an opinion. It is a mindset. It is a set of rules you choose to follow to make the separation play out and feel real. The ego is not a being. The ego is a script to follow. Football has rules. And if you identify with the football player, carry the ball tight and hit hard and hit low. These are scripts. These are scripts you're going to play out. Football. Ego has also scripts to play in the ego game. Healthy, wealthy, and wise, with generous, kind friends that love you more than you love them. Try to get yourself happy that way. Okay. The ego, which is all of that, all of your world, all of your divining to manufacture a better world to live in. The ego, which is not real, attempts to persuade the mind, which is real, that the mind is the ego's learning device, that the ego gets to use the mind and teach the mind. For example, this physical illness means I cannot be happy. A divorce means I am damaged goods, I'm unable to function on my own because whatever. The world is your body, is the ego, and it will try to bring you, the mind, into its world in allegiance. Because this is what you made it for. You don't need to change it. You do need to awaken from it. Okay? So the ego, which is not real, attempts to persuade the mind, which is real, that the mind is the ego's learning device, and further, that the body is more real than the mind. That's why physical sickness is our example for tonight. We could use emotional sickness. We could use self-worth. We could use identity. We could use a lot of other things. But tonight, Cecily brought up physical illness. So physical illness has a way of getting all your attention and seeming to be stronger than your choices. Physical illness. So it's trying to teach you that it's more real than your mind. The only way you're going to have a freedom experience around this is to have a spiritual awakening from a material trap. The body is a material prison. The mind following the body is a mental prison. And the brain is designed to give you all sorts of hormones and memories to continue the cycle of birth and death, of happiness followed by depression. It's designed to do that cycle. This is the body, the world, the dream, convincing the mind that the body, the world, the dream is more real than the mind. A Course in Miracles, on the other hand, that's a reverse miracle. A Course in Miracles is convincing you that the mind is more real than the body, the world, the dream. That the mind is more real. The way it does it, it is, has you do a little awakening exercise with these workbook lessons. Where, which one's going to grab you? Which one of those 365 will catch you in a moment like so many have caught me? This world holds nothing that I want. Or, God is the love in which I forgive. Or, if I defend myself, then I'm attacked. Now I understand what it feels. Now I understand why I've been feeling so small and beaten up on, because I've been worrying and defending myself constantly. Boom, you're out. The power of your mind has arrived. Which one of these lessons from the Holy Spirit will be the one that allows you to put down your pondering the ego's prison cell? Which one? Which one will allow you to just simply do nothing with the ego for a moment, come into the present, and breathe easy spiritual air and go, what have I been doing? Which one? My mind is preoccupied with past thoughts. Next one. I see nothing as it is now. Well, that means you're not even living, right? If you're so preoccupied with what isn't here, how could you possibly be living? You're dreaming. You're dreaming, dreaming, dreaming about the past. Even as you try to live out the present, it's filled with the past, so you're not free. Do you see? We're unwinding this belief system, the ego. And that is what the sentence is talking about. When it says that the ego, which is not real, attempts to persuade the mind, which is real, that the mind is the ego's learning device, and further, that the body is more real than the mind is. No one in his right mind could possibly believe this, and no one in his right mind does believe this, offering us another way, a right mind. Sorry, Jason, I ended up reading your paragraph. Now, Course offers a quick answer before it dives into another 1,200 pages to ease you into the truth. It just offers you an answer right here and now. If you're ready to hear it, this could be a spiritual awakening leverage that allows you to understand and to accept even what appears to be happening. Here it is. Jacqueline, would you read for us paragraph 6? I got your mute. Go ahead. Read for us paragraph 6.
Here then, the one answer of the Holy Spirit to all questions, to all the questions the ego raises. You are a child of God, a priceless part of his kingdom, which he created as part of him. Nothing else exists, and only this is real. You have chosen a sleep in which you have had bad dreams, but the sleep is not real, and God calls to you to awake.
Okay, now really, that sentence, I'll have her finish the rest of the paragraph. But please look at that sentence again that she just read. It is a quick summary of what the bleep is happening here. What I'm pointing to is you have chosen a sleep. Chosen is not a victim. Chosen means that your creative, powerful mind has done something creative and powerful. What? You chose a sleep. That's an action. You chose a sleep in which you have had bad dreams. I've had bad dreams. Some tough bad dreams. Yeah. This whole world of loss, indeed, has been a pursuit of a very creative mind. And not all for bad. But in order to take it to the extent where you could really feel separate, you had to put a lot of bad traps in it. And you've been very successful. We have been very successful. And we're not done with it yet. But we can. We who have chosen to go to a lighter way of being versus a darker way of being. We have chosen to go to a lighter way of being, and the book promises it, and we've been experiencing it as we've done our workbook lessons and we meet with each other. A lighter way of being. Keyword, being. Okay, Don's got a request. I'll visit that in just a second. Okay. It says, you have chosen a sleep in which you have had bad dreams. Okay, comma, but here comes the truth. The sleep is not real, and God calls you to awake. If you find this book interesting, if you find the promises that you could actually be aware, awake, and joyous, and that there is truly no connection with loss and happiness and unhappiness, loss is not the predictor of your happiness. Ego says it is. But turns out it's not true when you can choose to breathe spiritual, simple, easy, free air. And you've all done it. You've all stepped out of a bad moment for a moment, and you know your mind can do it. The key is to hang on to that moment.
When I was working at Lockheed, there was a man who was probably my favorite person there, who I'd say, how are you? And he'd say, I've never had it so good.
That's it.
I've never had it so good. That's what I want to say every single morning is I've never had it so good.
My sister's dentist said, she said, how are you? And he said, I'm fine as long as I remember. That I'm fine. I mean, it's boom, right? There's the truth simply spoken. Or I see Rick's name down there. Wendy used to talk to us about a woman who would say, well, it is what it is. And one time Wendy heard her say that, and she said, well, of course it is. And what an easy way to take life, to say, well, it is what it is. You know, that's exactly what it is. Not to talk about it, worry about it, read the news, ponder, suggest how much worse it could be or why it happened. This old woman just said, it is what it is. And the peace in these simple statements can just allow you to let go of the pain of the moment. Okay, Jacqueline, please continue.
There will be nothing left of your dream when you hear him, because you will awaken. Your dreams contain many of the ego symbols, and they have confused you. Yet that was only because you were asleep and did not know. And
by the way, before we move past that sentence, it says that the ego contains many of the ego symbols, and they have confused you. How many times throughout your life now have you had a difficult some comment was said about you or to you? Some comment about your performance maybe, or how you look, or what you said? And you realized, or you were told even, that it would only hurt if you believe it's true. They said I'm fat. Well, do you think you're fat? No, I'm all right. I don't think I'm really fat, but they said I'm fat. And if you take what they said is true, and you start to believe these ego symbols that are they start to confuse you, and you start to follow the characters in your dreams' opinion about you. You see the circle? Circle of the ego? Please continue.
Yet that was only because you were asleep and did not know. When you wake, you will see the truth around you and in you, and you will no longer believe in dreams because they will have no reality for you. Yet the kingdom and all that you have created there will have great reality for you because they are beautiful and true.
That describes these awareness of spiritual awakening, that there is another way, that there is the Course calls it a kingdom. It's really your right mind. Your mind is your kingdom, and your right mind is the one where is heaven. You return to heaven, to understanding. Your wrong mind is ego-guided, and it can be depressing and difficult and heavy. We're learning the power of the mind to step out of that and then still be able to play on that football field and live it out, living out your life without fear, for example. You need a miracle, but with the miracle, you can do it.
What I just got right now from this last bit was, if I believe something about somebody else is true, and it's a negative thing, and it's, you know, I could also believe it's not true. Just because I think it doesn't mean it's true.
Believe, right? She said believe.
Yeah, I did say believe.
Good.
And that means I'm not, I can't believe what I'm believing. I can't think it's real what I'm believing.
Let me expand now, because she used the word belief, and that's what we're studying tonight. Belief, faith, and vision. Belief is a choice.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Faith is beyond choice. Faith is a commitment, but you do not have faith in things that you do not believe. Hello? It's different. Belief is a choice. It's a desire. It's a learning, actually. You can have doubts and have faith. You must not believe. Your faith is not empowered. There's no foundation to your faith. Unless you have belief. Now she's talking about beautiful, Luann. So if you were believing that it was things they said were bad about you were true, then that must mean the next step is you have faith that what they said about you is true. And I think depression will follow. If you change your belief, and that's what it says right here, you will find that the truth is all around you and in you. That's what the lessons awaken in you. When they say, I could choose peace instead of this, when it says, I am the light of the world, if I choose. This switches your perspective. There is one love, and that I share with God. It just can sneak in and heat up the love that is the true love that is in you and always has been. And you leave it behind, the jealous love or the special love, for a moment. And you've just been elevated. Love now has a home in you. And you boot out the conditional love, if even for a moment. But these are miracles that happen. There are shifts in perception about what love is. Therefore, forgiveness follows about things that aren't love. Therefore, a holy instant will follow when you say, I'm glad the love is in me, where I can't lose it. This is what happens in your practice. And it is redefining the experience of your own life. Yeah. Okay, so we can leave that here. I just wanted to take that excerpt out as a chance to remind us of what's really going on and whether or not we're in a dream or not. Yes, you can't say this dream is not, you know, doesn't exist. It does exist for you. And you are decidedly living it out. And you're not, so far, it looks like none of you are quitting, at least in the next 60 seconds. I'm willing to wager everybody's going to stay in the meeting that much longer without trying to end the dream. No, you're completely committed to this, folks, and it's not a bad thing. The only bad thing is the level, the identity you've assigned to it. Other than that, you're right on track. Your problems, your cancer, your kids, your life, everything is on track.
So when I say I judge people, that's my belief about myself, and therefore I go by it.
Yeah, you're going with the ego belief, and you're deciding to make something that is a sin when you judge them, something wrong that should not be forgiven
right.
when you judge somebody. Yeah, yeah. Okay, do we have any time left? U.S. Okay, let's go and look at page 452 in the text. 452, paragraph 4. And Luann, when you get there, would you begin reading paragraph 4? Remember, we're setting, well, it's going to start out with that too. Faith, belief, and vision. It could easily be belief, faith, and then vision. Belief is something you choose, like we're studying A Course in Miracles, or deciding that there are a set of virtues of truth that exists somewhere, somehow, that are just fully loving and forgiving. Call that God. Shorthand, God. Don't let it trip you up. What we're doing is we're choosing that there is goodness and it is eternal. If there was a power that was bad and it was eternal, we didn't have made it this far, and there would be no hope in your heart. But you know what? Your heart is full of hope. That's a damn to sing. Just as much as your body wants to survive, your heart is full of hope. It's an amazing thing. Shows up all the time. So you could say, start with a belief that there is goodness, there is a chance to be peaceful. There is a way to live without feeling loss. That could be like a belief, right? Then you would have faith, which says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to live with that hope and not look for another reason to cry. And guess what happens next? Because you are not following the darkness, lightness starts to show up and the vision. You are empowered by the ability to see through your problem. The power and the ability to see through your problem, physical, mental, worldly, to see through it. It's a rise above the battlefield, to put it in another Course in Miracles phrase. And suddenly, a lightness of being occurs, an easy breath occurs, and you're calling what I call spiritual air. You're starting to breathe. You are now empowered to have a good night's sleep. You're now empowered to receive the help that was probably offered you already because you've put down fear as your guide and you got present and you're taking one step at a time in trust, which is what faith is. And then, of course, you know, the visions will continue to come and you'll see right through the problems. Okay, let's continue. I interrupted you, Luann.
That's okay. Faith and belief and vision are the means by which the goal of holiness is reached. Through them, the Holy Spirit leads you to the real world and away from all illusions where your faith was laid. This is His direction, the only one He ever sees. And when you wander, He reminds you that there is but one. His faith and His belief and vision are all for you. And when you have accepted them completely instead of yours, you will have need of them no longer. For faith and vision and belief are meaningful only before the state of certainty is reached. In heaven, they are unknown, yet heaven is reached through them.
No need for faith, no need for vision, no need for belief in heaven. You know, heaven is a code word in A Course in Miracles. Heaven's it's a pretty word. It's a beautiful word. I like to look at it. I think it shows up right next to, you know, unicorns and rainbows and everything good and dark chocolate. I love it. Heaven. It's like a promise of goodness waiting for you, right? It's a bridge word in actuality.
The promise of nothing but love.
Nothing but love, right? You bet. You bet. It's a code word, though, really, for understanding. Every time in this book when you see the word heaven, you could put the word understanding in there. It's not as pretty, but you have to, I think you would recognize that when you heal your mind about a situation and you understand what's happening, that you are a football player, for example, and you have put on already, uniform's already on, number, you're on the field. There's going to be a whistle in a few seconds. Either you run it or you're going to get hit. Either you get a job or you won't pay rent. Either you take some of these pills or medicines or follow the shaman, or you will continue to degrade from bone density. The sooner you recognize the game that you're playing, the sooner you will be able to take a step out of it for a moment in peace and go back in peace. And finish your game. This is not a mistake. The fact that you are a male, a female, healthy or sick, young or old, with as much money as you have or don't have, this is simply a script that you're following out. This is not a problem. The problem is that you've been deeply thinking about identifying that that is all you are. That's the problem. If you're not a body for a moment, you are free for even a moment. And then you take the belief and trust and faith that you remain as God created you. Then some understanding might get a chance to enter with vision. Vision means that you have the higher, all-encompassing perspective of the Holy Spirit. The ego means you have the darker, lower perception of the unholy spirit, the ego. We are working all here on having a lighter state of being, a spiritual awakening, the higher understanding, key word, of everything that's going on. And this book is offering practical step-by-step on how to do it. You don't need to look or question or wonder what to do next. It's written down for you because it's time. It's time now. And it's time for you to start dropping the fear, continuing with this exploration that the mind has been doing, but now without fear, now awake, like the football player who just goes to work and does whatever it is you're supposed to do in a football field when you get the ball. I don't think you need to think much at that moment, do you? It becomes really automatic, just like going through a divorce. You know, it's tough, tough, difficult things, and then suddenly you get the ball. And you know what you want to do with it in that moment. The key is to do it without fear. The fear just makes it harder. But you already know what you want. That you already know what side of the field you want your divorce ball to go. And you just do it. You carry it and you grab the lawyer and say, come along, pitch in. He's one of your teammates for a while. And you play that game out. If you do it with fear, it's a wreck. It's a mess. And you're very hard to help. You're very hard. You're a hard teammate. You're the hard teammate if you're full of fear. Right? So, faith and belief and vision. How much time do we have? A couple of minutes. Just enough time to sort of walk through this one more time together. Faith and belief and vision are the means by which the goal of holiness is reached. You see, those are our means of changing your mind's dedication. For what? From unholiness to holiness. From worry and doubt and judgment and being critical and impatient and all things ego to holiness, to going from a special relationship to a holy relationship with whatever it is in your life. You would need faith, belief, and vision to get past the traps and the difficulties that the body can measure. But that's the Holy Spirit's means for you. And it's all in your mind. The world doesn't have to change at all. Through them, the Holy Spirit leads you to the real world and away from illusions where your faith was laid. The real world. The real world in A Course in Miracles is the same world that you're looking at now. The same thing you're experiencing now. But what makes it real is that you see that indeed it is a dream that you are living out within a sleep that you have chosen and will continue until you awake. That's the real world. The false world is a prison that you're stuck in. And when you die, you're gone. That's the false world. And that this is all that you are. The body. You have so many more heartbeats and that's it. That's the false. The real world is you see the same world with your third eye from the perspective of the Holy Spirit. Same world. And now you can go through and play as a really good football player. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so I think, does that cover it? Yes, yes. When you've reached up completely instead of yours, yes. Faith and belief and vision are meaningful. Yeah, okay, we got it. Now, let's see what Don said in the last couple of minutes that we have on the chat. Don said... Will somebody read that to me?
It says, I wanted you to finish a statement you made earlier where you said, unseat the ego from judgment. The Holy Spirit knows. What does the Holy Spirit know? And rather than that. That's something you said. I don't know.
Well, I will just make up a continuation of that sentence.
Okay.
That is continue with the Course in Miracles. Unseat the ego's desire to judge, because the Holy Spirit knows that that is a further investment in your unhappiness. If you like, judgment makes somebody else's or some circumstance an uncorrectable mistake. Bad. Judgment. If you discover something bad in your life that's uncorrectable and costs you something, if you discover that and judge it that way, you should feel bad. Fair? Is that fair?
Yeah.
If you have faith in badness, you feel belief in badness, you will then have faith in badness, and you will then experience badness. On the other hand, if you take a step back and call the Holy Spirit in and help you to understand this person and what their motivations and their fears and what they're doing, it's all written right in what they said, right there on the surface. You can forgive your thoughts about they should be different. I didn't say that what they said was good or bad. No. You forgive your thoughts that they should be different. You forgive your thoughts. Your thoughts, not them. They will do what they do, be as they be. All that matters is what you think about it. That's where you live and what you think about it. They will do what they do. They will be what they be. Deborah.
Yeah. So being in this world, I made an unskillful move as a football player. And I wanted to clean it up. And so if love is all there is here, then what I did was I said that was to this person, I said it was unskillful. And if I had it to do again, I would do it differently. And I did ask for forgiveness because I wanted to connect with them on a level of love. And I know forgiveness is different than that in the Course of Miracles, but it was my way of asking to connect in love.
Yes, let me point out though that you're all yes, reaching out, asking for forgiveness, admitting to a faulty thing that you said or something that you did, all of that is post miracle. Post Course of Miracles forgiveness, you're now doing the cleanup job that your peace of mind is affording. Let me point out that the miracle happened when you decided that you had you no longer need to follow your line of stinking thinking of criticizing them or say following up with whatever unskillful thing that you did. That's the miracle. Forgiveness is you're not going to hold on to these negative thoughts or line of reasoning. The holy instant is I feel better. I feel there's room for love now. The fact that you went out and talked to this person is indeed a loving act that is following your freedom. And yes, you can say, you can take responsibility. You can start using guilt words. You can, you know, use all these other things, but the skillful act in your Course of Miracles work has been done because you let go of your righteousness that you had to be right. In fact, you've taken some responsibility and you'd like to have love come back in. You bet. It's happened. Your freedom is there. Follow it. Your Holy Spirit says, you know what? Start with maybe a letter, email, text, invite them out to lunch. I don't know what you did to approach that person and say, I hope you forgive me. Look at the defenselessness that comes with that. I hope you forgive me. It is calling for love. Love or a call for love is still love. And you're calling for love. If you really mean it, it doesn't matter what words you use. When you show up to that person with an open mind and an open heart, and you truly ask for forgiveness, you can use whatever ego proper words are needed with that person's vocabulary to show that you are not defending yourself. They, if they're interested, will step in at that moment because your weapons are down and love can resume. Corrections will occur. The key is you're not defending.
Sometimes when people say to me, forgive me, I feel like they're saying it just to, and this is my belief, I guess, I think they're saying it just to get out of whatever issue we're in.
That certainly happens. Yeah, you try to buy forgiveness with these words. But I think Deborah is genuinely feeling that she was unskillful unnecessarily and didn't want what happened to happen. Didn't want the feelings of stuff to occur.
I was talking about my own judgment about what some people say.
Deborah used the key words clean it up. Because it's ugly and messy and the world took some words or some actions that she did and wrong conclusions are being drawn that she just doesn't want to happen. Her heart is calling her to go clean it up. How many times in your relationships, the good ones, have you made a mistake and the cleanup, because of the mistake, cleanup was required and it ended up bringing you closer? Why? Because you had to get more honest than you're used to being. You had to get more honest and more trusting in those moments than you're used to being. And when you're honest and you're trusting and you're tolerant, you decide to be gentle in those moments and you drop all your defenses, it's really lovable. It tends to draw you closer because you're now a teacher of God. You get patient. You start to ask so that you can understand more than you would be understood and you would be forgiven. And that kind of honesty tends to make people drop their weapons and their criticisms and they may throw a few out because you kind of asked for it. It's okay. Let them blow off some steam and then continue to show up for the love that's driving it. Let them see the love that's driving you. And that converts the situation. Prove your open-mindedness. Prove your faithfulness that both of you want peace, love, joining, support. And the details will start to disappear. Careful not to get into arguments that go outside of the conversation. You know, the ego loves that. And you know, keep coming back to the very point that you would like forgiveness for. And your sincerity will show. Deborah, do you want to comment more on this?
The freedom that I felt was in that miracle moment of I don't know. It was very freeing, and I have in the past tended to like recycle my guilt or blame or whatever on myself, and it just vanished. And it was just such a beautiful, liberating thing for me. So yeah.
This really is a dream. And any pain that you feel is a dream of pain. Good, Deborah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody. We come to our time. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me. These are critical tools for you to recognize the power of your mind in any minute of your life to come back to peace, to drop the fear, and you could become the light in a dark situation, if not for you, for other people. Take a breath. Stop. Ask the Holy Spirit, let you be the light in this situation. And then go back on the football field and carry the ball to what makes the most sense, that brings you peace. That is your guide always. What do I know in this moment? What do I believe will actually bring me some peace? It always comes out better. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Let's keep it up. We'll do it again next week. I'll be back home. And have
thanks,
a great
Andrew.
Night. Good to see
tell
you, Wendy.
Tell me about what we're going to wear next week, okay?
Oh, yeah, right. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good to see you. Good to see everybody.